time-based art festival. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre after these announcements.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the release party for the Sexbots' new EP, Songs for Jamil, at Dante's on Sunday, September 14th at 9 p.m. Dante's is a 21 and over venue. The Sexbots are a provocative, experimental, electronic art pop act based in Portland who have a strong performance art component. Again, that's the release party for the Sexbots' new EP, Songs for Jamil, at Dante's, 350 West Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO's annual book and record sale will be happening on Sunday, September 14th at the Volunteers of America Building, 537 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. The sale will be from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and the first hour of the sale will be for KBOO members only. More information can be found on our website, kboo.fm, or by calling 503-231-8032. Again, that's the annual book and record sale, Sunday, September 14th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Cascadia. Today is September 9th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Coming up today on the show, we are going to be talking today about Islamophobia because, you know what, it's that time of year again. CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, Corey Saylor will be joining us. Corey has been on the show before. He is the director of their anti-Islamophobia project and will be joining us very shortly. In other news from around Cascadia and further afield, three Earth First activists arrested in July for locking down on the Seneca Jones biomass power plant were in court back in July. Thanks to Lauren Regan and the Civil Liberties Defense Center, their initial charges, which did in fact include a felony, were reduced to a single misdemeanor. Activists now face restitution payments and hundreds of dollars in court fees, which is not very nice, but certainly beats a felony charge. You can, get involved in your own direct action by getting in touch with the Civil Liberties Defense Center and perhaps anteing up something in the name of the cause. Always a good thing to do. Citizens United, of course, as the world knows, yesterday evening, the Senate voted 79-18 to advance a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. The next step, of course, is a vote coming up on Thursday. It is, in fact, a momentous and once in a generation in reversal of trends. And the other interesting reversal, of course, is the reduction in the felony sentencing. We've seen increasingly harsh, absurd sentences for really minor direct action events in which no one was physically hurt, but nonetheless some damage was done to people's property, and as the sentences handed down have been absurd. We see a reversal of that, of course, with the people involved with the Seneca Jones biomass. And now we see this, the overturning of the of Citizens United, or the potential overturning of Citizens United. The vote in and of itself is indicative of a change in the direction that the winds have been blowing in recent years. One other note, though, the Obama administration is still keeping what secret about Bush's warrantless wiretapping program. The Justice Department released to the American Civil Liberties Union two memos on the authorization of this wiretapping program. It's part of a stellar wind. The memos were created during George W. Bush's administration and contain the legal justification for electronic surveillance without a warrant. However, one of these memos was previously provided, and of course with serious redactions. It was provided to the ACLU in March of 2011, and it does in fact remain heavily censored. Nonetheless, as we have clear and hard evidence that under the Obama administration, the warrantless wiretapping continues. There is a piece in on Firedog Lake by Kevin Gastola that goes through in detail some of the twists and turns in Obama's use of the George W. Bush warrantless wiretapping programs. Nothing has changed, and of course, as we all know, it's gotten much worse. The emergence of the memos, though, at this point in history is interesting. Last week, further afield too, last week authorities in Kazakhstan announced that, a container holding cesium-137 has gone missing, just at a time when we see the rise of some of the Islamic State. It's a troubling development. But right here, back at home, we've bounced from Cascadia to much, much farther afield, to Kazakhstan, in fact. It's rather like a Thomas Pynchon novel, if you think about it. But we return to the here and now. And as we approach yet another anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, all across the country, Islamophobia always seems to surge. It's unfortunate, it's disgraceful, and it says a great deal more about who we are as a people than we might want to actually say out loud. Joining us today is Corey Saylor with the Council on American Islamic Relations to talk a little bit about Islamophobia and why we still seem to have tolerated in American society. Good morning, Corey. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for letting me join you. I appreciate it.
Well, it seems that every year at this time, American Muslims, particularly women, of course, in hijab, or anyone, and unfortunately Sikhs, who have nothing to do with they wear turbans, but they find themselves under attack. So how do we account for this? Why are we still, as a nation, tolerating a climate of Islamophobia? It's hard for me to understand this.
Well, I think the unfortunate reality is that we as a nation have struggled with prejudice since our inception. And we view Islamophobia just as another manifestation of that same old prejudice. So, you know, it's targeted any number of minority groups throughout our history. The struggle of African Americans is very well known. Japanese Americans were placed in internment camps after Pearl Harbor, even though, you know, they were loyal to their nation and served very proudly and honorably during World War II. Jewish Americans, Catholics have all been subject to it. So this is just the same manifestation of an old issue. And I think if we as a nation want to project to the world the best of our ideals as opposed to the worst of our fears, we have to address Islamophobia in that fashion. It's not just a standalone thing. It's part of a larger problem that we need to deal with.
And there was the incident in Oklahoma when elected representatives, it's extraordinary to me, that those in position leadership positions would indulge in the types of remarks that State Representative John Bennett and the Oklahoma Republican Party Chairman Dave Weston as well earlier this year. These are people who presumably are know where of they speak. These are people who are elected essentially to speak for people, and they have made remarks which are in any context would be utterly and completely disgraceful. The demographics across America, it seems in some regions this is more acceptable than in others. Yeah, even here in Portland, Oregon, where we consider ourselves liberal, although extremely white, I have to say, we do see this. We do see incidences of Islamophobia. And, of course, with 9/11, what changes have you seen in the expression of these types of thoughts or behaviors? Is it gotten better?
Oklahoma is a perfect example. So in 2010, they actually passed a law that specifically targeted Islam for treatment different than other religions, which is a clear violation of the First Amendment. We challenged that law in court and won all stages of that, and that law has actually been removed. So what they did is they went back and introduced another bill that didn't have language in it that specifically targeted Islam, but everybody knew, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, what the conversation was about. And I think that is what we're seeing for the most part in the society. The people who don't like Muslims, and no matter how much conversation you engage in with them, will never change their minds, have for the most part learned to talk, you know, in what's known as dog whistle politics. There are code words that you know that are anti-Islam. So Sharia is one of the main terms now. Speaking directly to what you were talking about with the elected officials, whenever we see something like ISIS murdering people in the fashion that they did, which is despicable no matter what religion you come from or no matter what belief system you belong to, that's when you tend to see people start speaking out and, you know, dropping any pretense and attacking Islam directly again. I expect elected officials to know better. Unfortunately, these gentlemen in Oklahoma just don't seem to have bothered to take the time to do anything other than read websites that slander the Islamic faith. Now, I remain hopeful, and I just want to share this with your listeners before I wrap up this comment, at least. Earlier this year, the chairman of the Republican National Committee called for the resignation of a Michigan member of the Republican National Committee who had made disparaging remarks about Islam. And that was an incredibly good sign that the Republican Party is beginning to adopt the position that they don't want to tolerate this kind of stuff in their ranks. And so far this year, we've seen two Republican officials actually resign their positions after making anti-Muslim remarks. So what's going on in Oklahoma with the chairman of the party there is still fresh, but I am hopeful, and we've written a letter to the head of the Republican National Committee asking him to do the same with this particular individual in Oklahoma. So we will see.
It is in the press release, which I'm looking at right now, the press release from the Council on American Islamic Relations. The quote from State Representative John Bennett is worth having. I would commend listeners' attention to this because it is so misguided and confusing. And were it not so full of hatred, it would be hysterically funny because this person is clearly struggling with the English language. It seems like English is his second language and his first as well. That aside, yes, what you this is encouraging. at a higher level, you know, leadership level. Well, but in communities, and I'm you know, speaking from experience in Portland and talking with Muslims here, the prejudice and lack of understanding is still pretty rampant. But before I let you go, we're out of time now. The Council on American and Islamic Relations is an extraordinary organization that has done amazing work everywhere across the country. Can you just let listeners know the website and a little bit more about the organization before we let you go today?
Sure, and I appreciate those comments. And let me just let your listeners know, we didn't pay for those comments in any way, shape, or form. That was entirely genuine. Thank you. So the Council on American Islamic Relations is the nation's largest Muslim civil liberties and advocacy organization. One of our primary functions is when people are discriminated against, either because they're Muslim or somebody perceives them as being Muslim. We have a number of attorneys on staff across the country, about 26 lawyers in different states, who can provide services free of charge to help people with those situations.
And we'll put the website.
Yes. Sure.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Say our website is www.care.com, and anybody who's interested in the organization can certainly go to that website and learn more about us. www.care.com.
Again, thank you so much. My guest has been Cora Saylor with the Council on American Islamic Relations. This has been A Cascadia Thought, Tuesday, September 9th, 2014. Janet Anderson, engineer the show today. Thanks for that, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson is a KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints: leading Chicano and Latino activists speak out against Obama's decision to sideline humane immigration reform. Also, we feature our regular weekly broadcast of